Caesars, for inviting me here. Actually been quite interesting to come to this, you know, very, seem to be a tight-knit community. I'm kind of from outside, and I found myself being interested in quantum spin ice unexpectedly, unplanned. It's kind of, you know, stars crossing and amazing thing happening. And actually, about 6 years ago, I visited Waterloo when Michelle introduced me to quantum spin ice. And you know, a couple of years later, when I started to look for a material that can, you know, that would have the properties that I'm looking for, I remember what Michelle told me about quantum spin ice, and that's how this entered. So this is kind of a full circle that I'm here telling you about this story. So now I see that most of you here are experts in, you know, pyrocellular materials, magnetic systems, and quantum spin ice. But from a superconductivity community, there is this very strong desire to change the course of history that's been always ripe with serendipitous, if you want to put in a positive note, or accidental discoveries that were unplanned. And the desire we have is to be able to do, for once, something like what This Is God was able to do in Genesis. He said, let there be light, and there was light. So can we say, let there be room temperature superconductor, and, you know, room temperature superconductor can happen? If we could do that, that would be so nice. I cannot do this. I haven't quite reached there. But my group has been pursuing is, you know, we had this epiphany that, you know, if we are not trying to target the temperature, which is very hard to control, instead, if we try to target the order parameter symmetry and sort of a nature of superconductor, perhaps we can actually be predictive. So that's what we want to talk about. So, because I haven't seen anybody talk about superconductivity yet in this workshop, let me give you a few words about what topological superconductors are and why quantum spin ice can play a vital role in engineering a topological superconductor. So topological superconductors host Majorana bound states, and you can actually find quite a bit about topological superconductors from Catherine's and John's review article, very nice review article. So what's Majorana bound state? There's a lot of buzz about it, but you know, it actually goes back to early 90s when people realized in the context of helium, if you have a P plus IP superfluid, and if you have vortices, the vortices can have zero modes. That's a mid-gap state that's bound precisely at zero energy. And if you have a spin polarized system, let's say if this was pairing of spin-up electrons, in your Bogolio bonds that you just see in, say, Tinkham, in any kind of introductory superconductivity book, you know that the Bogolio bonds are superposition of particle and hole. Typically, for a single superconductor, you would put, say, momentum P and spin up, momentum minus P and spin down. There will be spin indices making the whole quasi-particle have a particular spin by having hole with a spin, say, up, and electron with spin down. Now, if you have a spinless fermion or a spin polarized system, the spin index disappears. So when the spin index is gone, and if you have a Bogolyubov of quasi-particle at exactly zero energy, by having not having a spin index, you have this condition, this Bogolyubov condition, which will boil down to Majorana condition at zero energy. That is, this Bogolio bond, which is just a quasi-particle of superconductor, which happened to be at zero energy, which happened to be in a paired state with spin degree of freedom frozen out, it will be its own antiparticle. So why is that cool? Well, that is cool because Bogolio, this Majorana bound states are kind of like real number. And if you want to be able to conjugate something, complex conjugate, you need a complex number. You need two real numbers to make a complex number. Just like that, if you want to make a fermion, which you can talk about whether it is present or absent, particle or hole or its charge, you need two Majorana bound states. You can make a complex fermion that you can conjugate. Now, if I have gamma 1 and gamma 2 at two different vortices, I can construct a fermionic state, and I can now conjugate this, and the conjugate would have an opposite charge. So with two Majoranas that are separated apart, you are kind of encoding a two-state system that's not localized at either of these locations. It's non-locally present. So if I have multiple Majoranas, I have sort of a Hilbert space that's growing, and the degeneracy that's growing with this Majorana, the number of Majoranas or number of vortices, and they give you these objects that obey a non-abelian statistics. And the reason why this is called topological is because for fractional quantum Hall effect, for instance, Laughlin state, there is this famous degeneracy, ground state degeneracy on a torus. There's threefold degeneracy. Equivalently, with this vortices of odd parity superconductors, there's a degeneracy that now grows with the number of vortices, and if you treat the vortex as if you're punching a hole, so here a torus using a periodic boundary condition would be genus one system. Each vortex that I introduce to the system increases the genus, and each a pair of two vortices would define whether a particle is there or not, a two-state system. So with the 2n number of non-abelian vortices, or 2n number of vortices in a odd parity superconductor, I would have the degeneracy in the Hilbert space, a ground state degeneracy of 2 to the n minus 1. So now if I have such a Hilbert space, that defines a vector. So my quantum state is no longer described in terms of a wave function, which is a mapping from position of many particles to a single complex number. Now, once I have multiple vortices with my Majorana-bound states, each in it, I would have a vector space because we have this degenerate Hilbert space. And this so-called non-abeliannessness is simply the fact that when you have this vector space and operation of exchanging the position of two particles or Majorana-bound states would amount to a matrix operation on this vector space. And this non-abelian is about the fact that the matrix is generally doing commute. So when you exchange 1 and 3 and then exchange 1 and 2, that's different from first exchanging 1 and 2 and exchanging 1 and 3, that you're dealing with this multidimensional Hilbert space that you can create by simply having these vortices. So now that's all very interesting and beautiful. The question is, you know, where will we find these odd parity topological superconductors? So the most known material that is leading candidate to be a bulk topological superconductor is strontium ruthenate, but there are still a lot of issues and debate about it. And part of the reason why there is a lot of debate is that it was just discovered to be a superconductor that seems to be likely to be an odd parity superconductor. Nobody ordered it to be an odd parity superconductor. Nobody predicted it to be an odd parity superconductor. People actually made this, when Yoshi Maeno made this material, he was trying to find something that is very much like cuprate, which is not an odd parity superconductor, but it just happened to show the night shift that is not like any other singlet superconductor. And there's a lot of debate about what is the mechanism, why is it, you know, behaving the way it is, a lot of unresolved questions. Now, there was a very different approach that's been perhaps more successful and more definitive, because this was more taking an engineering perspective. We don't know how to design a superconductor, so let's not try to design a superconductor. But let's just use a well-known superconductor and put a semiconducting wire, which brings in a new ingredient, new element of spin-orbit coupling. And that's the semiconducting wire, such as indium oxide, that's been proposed and then experimentally realized with various measurements showing the indication of there being zero energy balance state. But so that, you know, perhaps we made one step forward towards trying to be being able to use this Majorana balance state. But from the sort of mechanism and physics of sort of emergent phenomena perspective, it's not so exciting because things are so simple. There is also a proximity proposal for using the surface state of topological insulator on an S-wave superconductor, which is of a similar nature. So what we would really like is a setting under which where interactions of some kind leading to an odd parity superconductor in a predictive way that is not as simple as just borrowing an existing superconductor. So how will we try to design an odd parity superconductor that we want? Well, if we could change the interaction from, you know, the isotropic Coulomb interaction that is repulsive and not very helpful towards pairing to something else, that might help. So we want to target manipulating interaction, and we want to target non-phononic mechanism, because phononic mechanism, well-established, well-studied, is also S-wave, and that's kind of old school. So if we want non-phononic mechanism, there is a long-standing proposal by Anderson, who said, well, just take quantum spin liquid and dope it. It's not going to be phononic superconductor, because quantum spin liquid, which is an insulator, non-order magnetic system, is full of spin fluctuation, entanglement, in the modern language. And it's just, you know, superconductor waiting to happen, just things are not moving. And if you just dope it with holes and let this singlet pairs that's already here in the, as an RVB singlet, let them move around, you'll have a superconductor. This people are keep trying whenever there is a candidate material for quantum spin liquid, but to the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been success in this approach yet, perhaps because most of the quantum spin liquid candidate materials that we have now are very strong mod insulators, and it's very hard, they just don't want to be doped. And even if you happen to succeed, even if you, after trying really hard, succeed in doping them, they might form a heterogeneous system. So what else can we do? And this is when my postdoc, Jen Wang Shi, had sort of an alternative idea. He said, you know, quantum spin liquid, quantum paramagnet, these are exotic, beautiful system. And when you dope it, you are trying to really change it. Yes, what you're getting at the end of it might be a superconductor, which is also cool. But you know, if you worked really hard to create such a beautiful system, why try to kill it? Let's not try to kill it. Let's let the quantum spin liquid be, and just borrow things that are good from it. So take quantum spin liquid or quantum paramagnet, and it will become clear in a minute why I want it to be a paramagnet. I just don't want there to be any order. And let's lay down a layer of metal. Okay. So now my metallic layer would have a characteristic energy scale of Fermi energy. My insulating spin system would have a characteristic energy scale associated with the spin dynamics. And the idea is, you know, what do you really need for a superconductor? You need something that can pair, and you need interaction that will pair them. And traditional approach is to look for both to happen in the same material. But, you know, given the progress that we are making with the Harris structuring, perhaps you can let the two ingredients, essential ingredients, come from two different physical systems. So now the advantage of bringing them from two different physical systems is that I have built in a separation of energy scale. So I have the Fermi energy associated with the metal. I have the spin energy scale associated with this spin liquid or quantum paramagnet. And there is a coupling between the two, which will likely be weak because we're forming a heterostructure. So the hierarchy of the energy scale puts me naturally in a regime where I can use perturbation theory. And at least I know when I do perturbation theory, I have a small parameter, and I have confidence on my predictions. What this leaves me with is a spin fermion model. I got this localized moment and itinerant electrons. In a typical setting where people talk about spin fermion model in a context of heavy fermions, you would have some F electron movement and some itinerant degrees of freedom in the same system. We have itinerant degrees of freedom coming from one system, local moment from another system. But as long as the wave function of these electrons from the metal penetrates, there will be an overlap and there will be a coupling. So what do we know about spin fermion model? If we are talking about a single isolated local moment, we know a lot about spin fermion model since Doniec's phase diagram. The moment can be completely screened through the formation of condo singlet, that is the itinerant electrons form singlet with the local moment and just screens away the local moment. Or the itinerant electrons can mediate RKKY interaction when there was no interaction between the local moments to start with and form an antiferromagnetic order. Now this is a nice simple phase diagram, but when the intrinsic interaction of the local moments enter and some frustration enter, the situation becomes a lot more complicated. If the intrinsic dynamics of intrinsic energy scale of the local moments and the interaction scale is large compared to the RKKY, this phase diagram has to be replaced by allowing for the frustration physics to enter. And this is sort of adopted in parts from earlier literature. Coleman, Andre, Santil, Vojta, Sachdev have studied this strong coupling limit when there is a strong coupling between the Kondo, the Kondo coupling scale is large. They've envisioned the Kondo singlet and RVB singlet that's coming from the frustration and Cooper-Pair singlet all coexisting happily. And that was this limit where all the numbers, all the scales are big. There is no perturbation theory available there, and they use some mean field theory ansatz. What we're interested in, given that we're thinking about heterostructure and we anticipate the coupling to be weak and putting us in a perturbative regime, that is the JK over EF, this is like inverse EF, is small, we expect us to be in this kind of a small JK perturbative regime where superconductor can ride on a quantum spin liquid. And in some literature, this kind of situation is called FL star or superconductor star. So what do we want for this to happen? We would like the metallic layer to be simple and isotropic. We would like the magnetic system to have no magnetic order of any kind, that is zero Q or finite Q. And we would like there to be dynamic spin fluctuation, and we would like the quantum spin liquid or paramagnetic side to be well understood. The idea is we would like to bring two systems that are individually well understood, neither of which are superconductors, and if they, when put together, become a superconductor, for once the mechanism will be very obvious. You know, they're superconducting because they're put together. So in order for such simplicity, we would like each of these sites to be well understood. And when we wanted a quantum spin liquid or a system satisfying these criteria to be also, you know, well modeled, well understood, that's when I remembered what Michelle was telling me about quantum spin ice. I thought, well, you know, maybe quantum spin ice will fit the bill. So that's when we decided to go down that route. So, of course, all of you know this much better than me, and you understand the importance of this picture of thinking of 2 in, 2 out as a divergence-free condition, which allows you to think about a vector field. And the implication of this was that you can start thinking about emergent phonon and monopoles, which are all very interesting and exotic. From the perspective of trying to engineer topological superconductor, this whole situation gives rise to a new very interesting constraint. The constraint is that the spin-spin correlation function has this structure that SA, SB, AB being a spin component is roughly proportional to delta AB minus QA, QB. And this has a rank 2 tensor structure. And it is, what do I mean by well understood? Well, for instance, for praseodymium zirconium zirconate, there is this measurement by Colin and collaborators showing that there is a lot of inelastic weight and that this momentum distribution of this inelastic weight can be more or less well modeled. This may not look exactly like what you have ordered from the emergent photon perspective, but that's not going to be important for me. What matters is that there is no order down to low temperature and that there is a finite energy scale associated with spin fluctuation, and that's what's going to be important. So how do we think about such a system? Well, the metal part is easy, just kinetic energy. And the effect of interaction, we're going to take it as a Kondo-like interaction. And the spin system would have its own Hamiltonian, which can be complicated. But as long as the energy scales are such that we can integrate out the spins, we're going to only worry about what is the effect of this coupling to the itinerant electrons perturbatively. Now, when we do perturbation theory, leading order perturbation theory is first order. But if there is no magnetic order, the first order term, each moment that each order of perturbation theory will bring in moments of the spin system, but the first moment is vanishing. So the leading order perturbation is quadratic, second order. And the second order perturbation brings in this very interesting situation where this little s represents the spin density of itinerant electrons. So psi, dagger psi are fermionic operators, and sigma is the Pauli matrix. This is a spin density of itinerant electron. And this form, SA, SA, SB, SB, came from this Kondo coupling. But what I want to draw your attention to is the fact that this spin-spin dynamic correlation function of local moment, the physics of quantum spin ice, enter in the interaction term of my itinerant electrons. I have generated a four fermion term who's got a very structured interaction. And that structured interaction has a structure that you measure by doing the dynamic neutron, inelastic neutron scattering on this material. So I'm going to put on a hat of an applied theorist, not going to ask how the particular structure that is observed is coming from. I'm trying to make a proposal for experiment, and I'm trying to be as predictive as possible. So I'm going to use the dynamic structure factor that was measured. And I'll plug in that measured dynamic structure factor here and ask what would be the effect of such structured interaction for my itinerant electron perspective. So the measured dynamic structure factor can be actually pretty well captured by this expression that comes from hydrodynamic model. So this is the model expression taken from hydrodynamic studies by Chalker and collaborators. And this is showing that when we choose a particular parameter, how we are modeling near the pinch point. This is a broadening of the pinch point at finite energy. And what the structure of this shows is that when I plug in this in front of spin-spin operator for itinerant electrons, which will come here, and give that as an interaction that my electrons are experiencing, there is this transverse component, and there is a longitudinal component. And this transverse component will give my electrons spin-dependent tensor, rank 2 tensor form of interaction. Now, this is a very unusual kind of interaction. And the fact that there is sort of a gauge-like structure enter also in a very interesting way. Typically, when you have gauge-matter coupling, such a coupling is a minimal coupling, and minimal coupling leads to repulsive interaction for electrons when there is fluctuation of the gauge degree of freedom. And that can simply be seen by the fact that the gauge field couples to current. And if you try to form a Cooper pair with opposite momentum so that you'll have a zero momentum carrying Cooper pair, that's you're trying to make the current going in opposite direction interact. And we learn in the freshman physics, currents going in opposite direction repel each other. So this usually coupling to gauge field is considered a bad idea if you're trying to make a superconductor. However, in the spin ice situation, it's this curl of emergent vector field that is a spin local moment. So my electrons from the metal whose spin is coupling to this curl of vector A, which is very different from this kind of setting. The point is that the electrons are not magnetic monopoles. You know so well what the magnetic monopoles look like, and the electrons in this metal layer is simply not magnetic monopoles. It doesn't carry the charge of this gauge field, so it doesn't couple like that. And this is all good because this kind of coupling leads to an attractive equal spin interaction, which is already a hint that this is going to help me get a non-S wave kind of superconductor. But there is also a very simple way to see how, by having a very structured interaction, I am successfully restricting pairing channel. So what I'm trying to do here is that I don't know how to predict high TC. I don't know how to make various interactions fight against each other when all channels are allowed. I know, however, how to bend certain channels. And if I bend certain channels, I'll be left with channels that I am allowing. And that's what's happening here. So the interaction that my electrons have been endowed through the dynamics of spins have this dipole-dipole interaction form. And all that matters is that it's that delta AB minus QA QB is a rank 2 tensor form. And when we opened up Sakurai after trying to understand our result, we first got our result looking really nice, you know, looking better than what we've anticipated. We didn't know all this going in. We were trying to understand why is it working out so nicely, and we realized there is this selection rule. So if you open up a chapter in Sakurai, you'll see this Wigner-Eckhardt theorem, which says when you have a tensor operator of rank r, it can be only connected by the states L prime and L as long as this condition is met. And this selection rule is underneath why there is no transition between 1s to 2s in hydrogen atom. Instead, you can only have a transition from 1s to 2p, which is well understood. Similarly, our rank 2 tensor form of interaction, which have been endowed to my electrons from the spin ice because of the anisotropic structure of the spin ice, the structure factor, has a rank 2 tensor form. And that this allows having an expectation value with respect to spin singlet operators, and it can only have expectation value or transition between even odd parity or triplet channels. So this is what we can gather by looking at a long wavelength effective theory. But now the question is, what happens when we try to deal with these interacting electrons? We have this separation of scale where just like when you have the phonon being a much slower sluggish degree of freedom compared to electrons, you have this Migdal's theorem. We have the same separation of scale. We have the dimensionless ratio, and we can expect to be to have full right to do mean field theory and get the answers right. So the prediction for the TC is that there is this dimensionless ratio that has to do with the interaction scale and the density of states entering and the spin dynamic scale. And we can actually work out what is the leading channel by pretending we didn't know anything and just carrying out the mean field theory in different channels and looking at the eigenvalues, and indeed what comes out to be the leading channel by a huge margin. This is eigenvalue, which goes in the exponent, is the odd parity. So how much more time do I have? negative?
In the negative time.
In the negative limit. Okay. Since I have negative time, let me just quickly get to the end. So we wanted to be really serious about this proposal. We wanted to persuade people who are materials experts to try to pursue this proposal. So we did ab initio calculation to see what would be a good material that can be a metallic layer candidate, and whether such a material grown on the Prestinium zirconate substrate would show a wave function penetration that would allow this itinerant electron to interact with the dipole magnetic moment. And we confirmed that can indeed happen. We confirmed that the Fermi surface of such a system can be such that has a nice simple Fermi surface, which is kind of necessary for topological superconductivity. So my bottom line is that we have this new perspective of finding some utility beyond being beautiful of quantum spin ice and quantum spin liquid in general. And I would really like to turn to you for material suggestions for material whose magnetic moment is vanishing, the order. There is no order. There is good dynamics fluctuation. And ideally, if the energy scale is big, that would be even better. And that's our proposal. And let me just leave it at the page showing all the people who did the hard work. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Questions? Bruce?
So how does the energy scale enter into the properties of the superconductor that you would eventually get? At that 0.17 MeV that you mentioned?
TC. It determines the TC scale. So it plays a role. So you should really think of this as a new phonon. In the BCA superconductivity, what the energy scale, the phonon bandwidth, whether you have a gap or not doesn't matter. It's the bandwidth that matters. The bandwidth enters through cutoff, and that comes out as a prefactor out front of TC. That's the Debye frequency. So the energy scale associated with the dynamics of spin fluctuation plays that exact same role. And the only difference is that with the phonon, the spatial dependence is isotropic, so you get an S-wave superconductor. But with a system like spin ice, you have a very anisotropic, the pinch point, very anisotropic. This anisotropic structure, when it enters in the interaction, gives you a very anisotropic interaction. It doesn't matter whether in the isotropic channel you have a repulsive interaction, because you have attraction in an anisotropic channel.
You mentioned the failure of the RVB theory.
I didn't say it failed. It hasn't yet succeeded.
Yet succeeded.
I think the theory is fine.
So,
I love the theory.
My question really is that now a well-accepted fact that the coup plates have nothing to do with RVB?
Well.
Your talk is about lasting a week, right?
It's being recorded. Well accepted. Whether the community will ever accept anything, well, I don't know. But you know, the RVV is starting from, if you first have a quantum spin liquid, you're going to dope it. There is no evidence, no definite evidence of spin liquid yet. Let me put it that way. Yeah. Yes.
I'd just like to make a comment because you mentioned the potential roots. Why 1D, 2D proximity?
Uh-huh.
In principle, there is a 3D system that is a Prestinium irradiate.
Okay? Right.
Because you really have this two metallic system, which is separated from this rare earth quantum spin equation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that's why I was asking Carol about Prestinium irradiate. And he told me it's very complicated. So, to put it simply. So, for my job here, you know, wearing a hat of an applied theorist, what I'm doing here is I take the dynamic structure factor, measure experimentally, plug in to predict superconductivity, and in doing so, I need definite information about two things. One is the band structure, and the other is the dynamic structure factor, and neither of which are available for Prestinium irradiate. I would love to think more about Prisma Meridae, but I need more input because I'm not raised in this field. I need more input from experts.
Can I ask if that type of effort has been done with, let's say, conventional rare earths, conventional oxide, rare earths oxide that are long range ordered, and put them in metal as a deposit and see if you can get that magnon-mediated
So the thing is, if you have a magnetic order, the leading order effect of coupling is to reflect that magnetic order to the electrons. So the split spin degeneracy, reorganize Fermi surface, and then you're done. So I really don't want long range order. That's why I'm turning to quantum spinized or quantum spin liquid or other quantum paramagnet. If the order happens at very low temperature.
What about driving the magnetic phase to a quantum critical point?
Yes, of course, that would also be a possibility. And there's a lot of proposals regarding, say, heavy fermions, that's how the superconductivity is occurring in the bulk, right? The trouble with situations where you have itinerant electrons to start with, which has magnetic tendencies, is that, you know, it's the same itinerant electron that's going through quantum criticality, and that's fluctuating, and theoretically that's not a well-controlled situation. And here I have
the same setting.
Oh, I see. And drive it, kill the order.
I see.
I don't think it's been tried. I just don't think people have thought about this kind of heterostructure route. When I bring this up with people, everybody say, like, you know, that could be done. Yeah, that would be interesting. Yes?
You started talking about Majorana fermions at the beginning. Do you know what the symmetry of the pairing mechanism would be?
For this quantum spinized heterostructure?
Yeah.
That's where I started to have negative time. So here is the pairing symmetry. So we believe there are two possibilities with the, there can be microscopic details that are splitting the degeneracy. They're kind of close in terms of their eigenvalues. One is total angular momentum Jz equal to zero channel. Jz is the only good quantum number because of the spin orbit coupling. The other is Jz equal to one channel. This is a channel which is chiral. This is a channel that is non-chiral, kind of like spin down with angular momentum up, spin up with angular momentum down. Either of these will work in terms of having Majorana.
Okay, so Jeff, maybe a quick question, and then we can.
Is the long range nature of this essential, or could you use like some trivial quantum paramagnet, like a balanced bond solid with some anisotropic excitations to do something similar?
I don't think long range nature is important.
Okay.
Yeah. All I needed is to be dynamic and paramagnetic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you.